Time to pull up a chair and talk some Dynasty football. I am your host, J.J. Wenner, and this is the Rider Dynasty Podcast. Tonight is our annual postseason postmortem on the 2020 rookie class. We begin with quarterbacks and tight ends. Joining me for the dissection tonight is Big Daddy Don Detweiler. Don, your beloved Steelers lost to the Browns when Mason failed to connect with Chase on that two-point conversion. This set up a rematch in the wildcard round. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that the Steelers will win this week?
You know, I wish I could say that I was a perfect 10 on this. There's so many things that are lining up for the Steelers. I mean, the head coach can't go because of COVID. They're missing their starting guard, who's a Pro Bowler, in Bitino, who would be trying to deal with Cam Hayward. But now Cam Hayward gets to see a rookie who he ought to just decimate. But there's always that Mike Tomlin deal where they yummy one up to a team they have no business losing to, and this just screams of that. Even though the B team almost went into the Cleveland Stadium with the playoffs on the line and took care of business, I still, you know, you always wonder, and you wonder if that second half in Indy was an aberration for Ben. All that said, it's still 9 out of 10. I'm still really confident the Steelers will be absolutely fine.
Absolutely. I'm on board 100%, maybe. Mr. Eric Braun is also with us. Now, Eric, the football team will have the opportunity to beat Tommy Touchdown in their return to the playoffs this week.
That's right.
Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that the football team... Now, I'm referring to Washington, yeah. So don't use semantics against me in this. How confident are you that your football team, the football team, will win this week?
1 out of 10? I'd say possible. I mean, you get some pressure on Brady with that defensive line. He's not mobile, force a turnover or two. Maybe get something to happen, but I don't know. Probably just as likely that they lose by 3 touchdowns. They've got a shot, but I'm not a...
Yeah, and Chase Young decides to go and call out the great one already, so that was smart.
I think people are making too big of a deal about that, though. I don't think Tom Brady could care less.
Yeah, and he didn't mean it that way at all. He's just made the point that like any pass rusher would covet a sack against Tom Brady, which is true.
So you said 1 out of 10?
Yeah, 1 out of 10 for me. They've got a shot, but it's not great. But hey, happy to be there.
Hey, it would be a storybook ending, man, for Alex Smith's career as he retires, please, after this. Mr. Kyle Allen, with the understanding that the Pats are not looking to bring back Cam, do you think that the Patriots will pursue a trade, draft a QB, or both?
I think they would be wise to do both. Obviously, with all the great quarterback talent in the league, you've got to have a good one to compete. Cam showed that he's not going to be that guy. They've already said, as you mentioned, they're not going to bring him back. With Deshaun Watson putting it out there that he's a little disgruntled with the Texans, the Patriots just lost Nick Caserio over there to take over the GM job. A little insider trading wouldn't hurt my feelings. I think that would be just a whole conspiracy theory in itself, but I would love to see Deshaun Watson come to New England. I don't think it's likely. I feel like it's a lot more likely than in the draft, but they would be wise to pursue different options. You never know what you might find. Nobody expected them to get Cam this year, and then it happened, and everybody was freaking out, expecting the Patriots to just pick up where they left off, but Cam obviously a great fit for that.
Yeah, there wasn't much offense to fit in with, unfortunately, with the Patriots. Now, before we get into tonight's topic, do me a favor. Hit subscribe and leave us a review. Follow us on Twitter at Ride or Dynasty. And please check out our website, RiderDynasty.com, for all of our latest articles. Now, let's check on the news. Kyle, you mentioned that Nick Caserio got hired by the Texans as their general manager. Now, my son saw him at the Sloan Conference up at MIT a few years ago. He is an analytics guy. How do you feel about this hire?
I feel like it's a good fit for the Texans. I mean, obviously Bill O'Brien wasn't getting the job done as a GM, and he kind of acted as a de facto GM in New England. It was more the Belichick show. A lot of people are pointing to, the Patriots in the past 7 years have had one Pro Bowler and it was that they drafted and it was a punter. I'm like, yeah, but that's not really on him. So I'm curious to see what he can do. I think it's a good hire for the Texans. Obviously, Patriots have a long-standing history of success. So anybody that comes out of that system, it's going to show if they're either a product of the people around them or if they were part of the success.
Don, Houston, New York, and Detroit all interviewed Marvin Lewis for their open head coaching position. Is this a good decision?
I'm of two minds on this. Marvin Lewis, believe it or not, actually won some things in Cincinnati with a moribund franchise and a shoestring budget, and was still always in kind of the conversation for the playoffs just about every year. He was just good enough to maintain his job, partially because of the Blanc family just being really cheap and not wanting to pay him out for his contract, but also partially because he did a reasonable job. And a lot of the dysfunction there wasn't credited to him. With a veteran roster, I feel like he could be okay. But this does feel a lot like kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, as a Jets fan, shockingly, I would not be disappointed if Marvin Lewis came to town, only because of what it means for the organization, that he is a great leader of young men. And I think that's what you really need in the NFL this year, at this time, to really develop your young talent and get buy-in.
He reminds me a little bit of Ron Rivera. I think Ron Rivera is a better coach, but like that's exactly what you need when you're one of these bottom of the barrel teams. Is you need a coach who's going to come in and change the culture. And you know, Marvin Lewis has the respect of players, and I think can turn them around from being a joke. Even if, you know, Lewis and Rivera, they might not get you to a Super Bowl, but can they put you in the position that the next guy can?
Yeah, and you know, and I know Marvin Lewis is thought of kind of as a joke in the... Sometimes I forget how good these coaches are, even the bad ones, how much they know about football. I mean, Marvin Lewis was a genius defensive coordinator with the Ravens. I mean, he was fantastic. Like, and we kind of forget that. Like, I know... I got into it with somebody in our Slack about Adam Gase, somebody who I am not a fan of. But I mean, Adam Gase was hired by the smartest people in the NFL multiple times.
And still is getting buzz.
I mean, Nick Saban loves him. He gave him his first job. He hired him out of high school to come to work for him for Michigan State, then brought him with him to LSU. So even like the worst NFL head coaches still know so much more about football than we could ever even possibly fathom, that I think we sometimes overlook.
Yeah.
That being said, Adam Gase is an asshole. Go ahead, Don.
One of the big things about Marvin Lewis is he's going to come in and he's not going to try to run one side of the ball. He's definitely in the CEO camp of head coaches, which I think is the best possible situation. Yeah, he'll absolutely contribute to the defense, and that's his subject area and what he does the best. But he's there to orchestrate the show. He's not there to dominate one side of the ball. And I feel like that's one of the most essential things that so many coaches have gotten away from, that you can't micromanage one side of the ball. You have to be in charge of the whole thing. Get good people, let them do their jobs.
It is very difficult to be a good manager. I think having worked in sales for many years, finding a good sales manager was like, you know, finding a fucking diamond in the monocacy. It doesn't really happen that easily. So I agree. I think sometimes you need to bring in a CEO type, somebody who's going to be the leader, and then let the coordinators handle all the details. Eric, sorry, we got stuck on that one for a little bit. Last news headline. Jason Garrett said he's going to interview with the coach for the coaching job with the Chargers. Now, you currently have Justin Herbert as your QB7. How far would you drop him if Garrett gets the job?
I don't think I would drop him, to be honest. I mean, I don't think Anthony Lynn was a great coach either, so it's not like we're moving away from something great here. We're not, you know, this isn't Andy Reid retiring or something. And I think Garrett probably could go into that same conversation about guys we just talked about. Like, you know, these guys know football more than we probably give them credit for sometimes. I don't think Garrett's a great coach, but the Cowboys weren't a disaster. Dak was good when Garrett was there. So it's not who I want to see them hire if I'm a Herbert, if I have Herbert. But I don't think it's a disaster.
I couldn't agree more. I think coming off of our last conversation, that is something I completely agree with. There could be worse things than Jason Garrett. All right, gentlemen, That was an exciting end to the season, but there is no time like right now to jump into some self-reflection over our 2020 rookie draft decisions. Now, for this exercise, we're using Superflex Rookie ADP from May of 2020, compiled by Ryan McDowell for DLF. Now, we're going to go through each position group and find out exactly what went right and what went wrong for each player. Now, gentlemen, in Superflex, quarterbacks are obviously the most valuable asset to draft. Kicking off our postmortem with a look at the 1-1 in Superflex rookie drafts is our 1-1 of injury analyst, Mr. Kyle Allen.
JJ, you're too kind. Thank you very much. Starting off with the 101 is Mr. Joe Burrow. He did start this year. As we all know, unfortunately, he was injured in week 10. So through those 10 weeks, he put up 17.87 points per game, which was not quite QB1 numbers. On a points per game basis, it put him at the QB17, and he still ended up finishing as the QB25 on the season. In our Rider Dynasty Riders rankings, we have him as the consensus QB10 in Sexford Dynasty. So the question of will he start next year comes to mind, obviously considering that injury. He's already posted videos of him walking unassisted. He's obviously got a lot of physical therapy and training ahead of him. If I have him, which I do in two separate Dynasty leagues, I'm holding on unless I can get an absolute king's ransom for him. I believe he's got everything he needs to be able to come back. The Bengals have the 5th overall pick this year, which they will hopefully and likely invest in offensive line help to protect Joe Burrow. Obviously, we don't want a repeat of this year. I expect him to be ready to go at the beginning of the season, and if he's not, then it should be in the first.
Yeah, I would say personally my biggest worry about him was, is he going to start week one next year? But you're pretty confident that his rehab will bring him to a week one timetable?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be close. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him in the preseason. Maybe he's just doing passing work. He's not actually taking snaps in preseason games. And the Bengals would be right to be cautious with that. There's no reason to throw him out there. You know he's your franchise quarterback. There's no question about that. I highly doubt they go and take, you know, a quarterback with pick number 5 to put pressure on him. That wouldn't really make sense when they made the investment last year. So I think they're really going to beef up that offensive line. They've got a pick in every round. They've got 2 7ths. I think they're going to beef up the offensive line, hopefully get some help around him, and we'll see what he can do next year. I'm excited to watch him.
All right, Eric, who is the next QB drafted?
So the next QB was Tua Tagovailoa at the 1.04, and he did not have the same kind of season as Joe Burrow, kind of a reverse. He started on the bench behind Ryan Fitzpatrick and finished the season as the starter, although he had some kind of hiccups along the way where he got benched mid-game a couple of times, so kind of season for him. I think, no doubt about it, he's going to start next year. The Dolphins have already said, okay, we're committed to him, and I think that was pretty expected. No reason to panic on him yet. That said, I think Tua's getting some heat lately for underperforming, and I think it's kind of deserved. If you look at a lot of different passing stats, I mean, passer rating, QBR, yards per attempt, adjusted yards per attempt, adjusted net yards per attempt, you name it, he's outside of the top 25 quarterbacks on the season, in some cases as low as 28, 30, 31. So that's not a good start, and I realize he was a rookie, and it's not a great situation, but I think we should probably, acknowledge that it was a disappointing start despite everything going on. He was outplayed by Ryan Fitzpatrick. He was outplayed by some not that great quarterbacks in the NFL, like guys like Mitch Trubisky. So I'm kind of down on Tua heading into next season. Again, not panicking, not giving up on him. But I might be looking to trade him if you can find somebody who's still valuing him at last year's value.
Well, let's just say straight up, if I offered you the 1-4 and you had Tua, would you take the 1-4 this year?
Yeah, I would. I think I would take the 1-5 for sure. I think consider 1-6 to 1-7. Just thinking about who my early top players are. I think there's going to be three quarterbacks and maybe the top five picks. And then you've got Etienne Harris, Devontae Smith, and Ja'Marr Chase. I think I'd take any of that group seven. Over him.
Okay. Interesting.
That said, I know there was a lot of pushback. We kind of had a debate on this in our
Slack
chat. Yeah. And I know there's a lot of Rider Dynasty guys who think I'm being too harsh on Tua. So that's, you know.
I think the best thing you can do is to be honest about a player. And I think you always talk about sunk cost fallacy, right? So if I'm not mistaken, what sunk cost fallacy means is don't keep chasing bad money.
Yeah.
So if you think that you wasted your 1-4, then you should trade him and try to get what you can out of it.
And it's also, I mean, you said just about being honest about the player. And I think that's the key point here is like, yeah, Tua is not a lost cause by any means. He was a good prospect and he wasn't a complete disaster, but he wasn't good. He was bad, let's be honest. And that happens to rookie quarterbacks. But I don't know, rookie quarterbacks who are bad are less likely to be successful than your average top five pick, right?
As somebody who's been chasing after Sam Darnold year after year, that this is going to be the year he finally breaks out. I understand that. I understand the hope, right? The eternal sunshine. But eventually you do have to admit when a player doesn't perform as you expected him to perform. But if Tua's downside is ending up QB16, QB15 in the league, like there is still some value there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, the other thing to look at here is we have the benefit of seeing what the actual NFL draft is going to happen and a lot of free agency before most rookie drafts next year and before you're going to have to really set things up. So if Miami goes out and adds a Ja'Marr Chase to be a dynamic playmaker to that lineup and really improves the offensive line with their substantial resources here coming up in both draft capital and in free agency money, then you're really looking at Tua like, okay, now we're in business, because there's been a lot of question about the wide receiver talent down there and a lot of how he was being utilized as well. That said, you're foolish if you're not always listening to other people. So if somebody approaches you with a trade, you should certainly be considering it, because that's just good management of your own team, first of all. And if they're really fired up about it and you can get the 1-4 and stuff, then maybe that's something you have to look at.
For me, yeah, it's what you just said. It depends. If somebody's coming to you looking for them, then you probably have the opportunity in a trade to kind of drive the price up to what you're wanting to get back. Because if I'm approached about a trade, if it's a player that I really don't want to give up, then I'll straight up tell somebody, like, I really don't want to trade them, but if you get to this point, then I'll move them. So you kind of have to play that in your back pocket. And it also depends on your roster construction. If you're just like shot at quarterbacks, or all your quarterbacks are like Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, and Matt Stafford, like, you probably need to hold on to a young, high upside quarterback that has a brighter future than, you know, whatever you can pick up that's a backup and hope somebody gets hurt.
Well, speaking of young, exciting quarterback prospects, Don, who do you have next?
Yeah, Justin Herbert here is the 110 overall, but boy, did he not play like it. He was phenomenal the whole season. And we had a lot of questions, as many people did, with the fit, how the Chargers were going to work out, how he would settle in, if he would even play. And all of that was put to rest so quickly and just so definitively. The total fan points and most scoring metrics have him right around the 350 mark for the season, an average of almost 23 points a game, which is phenomenal. He played in 15 games and was just excellent. He was a league winner for a lot of people. And there's no reason in the world any of that should change. The weapons around him are phenomenal. There's a willingness to invest in the offensive line there. And whatever coach comes in is likely to help contribute to the development of him. So, yeah, we were curious how this was all going to work out coming out of that funky Oregon offense. And even in his bowl game, when he goes and scores three touchdowns all on the ground and doesn't throw one, everybody's a little worried about, yeah, he's an athlete, but does he fit? He's been dynamic. So that was just super useful. So, yeah, he's going to continue starting. There's no reason to assume that he wouldn't. There's no push there on the roster to unseat him. And there's no desire on the franchise's part. So if you have him, you're very fortunate, because you got him at what would be a bargain basement price for a quarterback of this talent and pedigree.
So what do you think went wrong with most people's evaluation
I think
of
a
Justin
lot,
Herbert that caused him to fall?
I think what caused him to fall, he was on the radar for so long. I think some of it was a talent arc at Oregon. The year prior to his senior year, they graduated a lot of skill players on that offense, so there was a lot of underclassmen around him, which led to inconsistency at the wide receiver position on the Oregon Ducks team that year. Forced him to do some other stuff, forced the offense to change a little bit, and there was just, it was kind of an up and down year for the whole program, which definitely had an effect on the on-field product. And I think that some of the early scouting issues of how well does he read defenses, because that offense doesn't really require you to do those things, kind of had scouts in a situation where you had an uber prospect like Burrow come out of nowhere and just absolutely dominate, and Tua, who had been on the radar for so long, trying to unseat those guys was just an impossibility.
Fair enough. At 211 in rookie drafts, Jalen Hurts was drafted. Now, most Philly fans were up in arms over this draft pick at 221 in the actual NFL draft, when there were so many weapons for their franchise QB Carson Wentz on the board. I don't know if we have ever quite seen a QB crumble like Carson did this season. Looking at Hurts from week 13 through week 17, he was the QB 8 in total points and QB 11 in points per game. So that's an average game of 15 for 29, little bit over 50%, 206 yards, little over one TD, little under one interception, 60 rushing yards. It was okay. Wentz was a little bit better, except in interceptions. So I don't know how great Hurts was, but most importantly, the Eagles went 1-4 during that stretch, losing two huge games to Dallas and Washington. Now, I know the Washington game might have been thrown, but he certainly seemed to be trying in the first half. Now, with Carson asking to be traded, this job may be Hurts to start the year. I think that Hurts will be able to perform if he enters the season as the starter. This means that the team has spent time designing an offense to fit his skill set, hopefully. His ceiling is current Lamar Jackson. His floor is EJ Manuel. So it's a wide range. Is he worth the gamble? You didn't make a huge investment at 211 to get him on your squad. So, yeah, absolutely, you're keeping him. I don't know if I'm investing a first-round pick in Jalen. I don't know if he's a starter in the end.
Okay, I'm kind of 50-50 on Hurts. I had him in two leagues. Even in our writers' league, I no longer have him. I traded him. I was able to move him and a couple other – or another player – to get DeAndre Hopkins and move up in the draft. Don is very happy with me about that trade.
That's a fantastic trade, Kyle Allen.
Thank you, thank you. But in my other Dynasty League, I'm holding on to him. I liked what I saw from him in that. I know that last game, the Twitter consensus is that he's garbage, he's the worst, he's so bad. But I mean, look at who he had to throw to. Greg Ward and like who else? The ghost of Travis Fulgham, DeSean Jackson's shoestrings, like nobody to throw to. Philly, if you're listening to this, Philly, please draft some wide receivers this year. Please, for the love of God, help this man out. That's all. Eric, what were you going to say? I apologize.
You're good. I think I was just going to comment on, you know, the odds are still not great for him, probably. He was a second-round pick, and, I mean, the track record of second-round picks is just – at quarterback is just, like, abysmal. Obviously, most second-round picks at quarterback don't end up as a starter by the end of their first season and don't flash like Hurts did. So, you know, maybe take that with a grain of salt. But I guess it's only been a couple of games. I'm just not – I don't know. It feels like he's shooting up rankings a little too fast right now. And the rushing upside definitely helps in the short term. But long term, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sold he's a long-term starter.
Well, I tell you what, I got hammered on Reddit for equating actual performance on the football field to fantasy rank. It came into account with Hurts and also Kyler Murray, with the fact that Kyler Murray still hasn't had a winning record. Mm. And my statement was, like, a player may be supremely talented, but if they don't win at the quarterback position, they're not going to be playing in the NFL for long.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's...
I mean, Murray has to start going to the playoffs and having winning seasons.
Yeah. I think sometimes I probably focus on it too much, but I completely agree, especially at quarterback, that it's... Sometimes we just need to focus on with these young guys, like, are they going to get a second contract? Is their team going to stick with them? I mean, at the end of the day, just Jalen Hurts needs to be a starter 2 years from now for, you know, his trade value to make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming after Jalen Hurts, this whole group was sort of bunched together. Eric, who do we have next?
Next, we have Jordan Love, the first-round pick from the Packers last season. He obviously did not start this season as Aaron Rodgers just went on a tear to likely win another MVP, which, of course, means that Jordan Love is likely not starting next year and very possibly not the season after that. So I'm not really sure what to do with that. What went wrong? Nothing went wrong on Jordan Love's part, but that's a really tough situation to be in. A year ago, people were kind of grumbling about, is Rodgers starting to slip? Is he still elite? And the answer is clearly yes. I can't see the Packers moving on from him, even if they think Jordan Love looks great in practice. And if they do move on from him, if they were to say, okay, fine, Rodgers looks great, we'll trade him. To me, that's a red flag, because if he did look great in practice and they thought, wow, this dude's the real deal, just hold him forever. Like, don't let him leave.
Like you did Aaron Rodgers.
Right. So it's like, to me, you're probably several years away from Rodgers leaving. And Jordan Love's probably only hope out is to actually be bad. So I don't know. I don't think he has much value. I'm not very optimistic. And I would try and trade him for certainly if you can get the third round pick back that you may have spent on him in a Superflex league last year, I would absolutely.
I don't think anybody's giving a third for Jordan Love, unfortunately, unless you find like that one Jordan Love stan that's in your league, but you would have to have a pretty big league to find a Jordan stan.
Yeah. I mean, he's tough because he's not the hot new thing, and he's still years away from being something. So,
especially with a bunch of young quarterbacks coming into the next rookie class, the shine is coming off Love pretty quickly.
Yeah, now, I think the only way that he's going to find any NFL relevance and fantasy relevance is if he takes a career arc kind of like Jimmy G. The guy ahead of him that's been there forever isn't going anywhere anytime soon. If he were to get hurt or something and he finds his way and plays a few games and looks impressive, he may end up getting traded somewhere else, but that's the only way I see him blossoming, unless Aaron don't expect him to do that.
That's the thing, though, is that the Packers don't have any reason to trade him even in that scenario until he's due for an extension.
True.
Which is, you know, you've got to wait through three seasons essentially for them to go, okay, well, maybe it's worth moving. So I agree. I think that's his path out. But
yeah, the only reason I could see for trading him would be if they're looking to give Rodgers weapons. But if you don't give Rodgers weapons, he gets really pissed off and wins an MVP. So I would draft another quarterback in the second round next year. Keep
Work
doing
well.
It. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe Rodgers will just keep on winning MVPs. So following Jordan Love at 3-8 went Jacob Eason. Now, the 6'6 hurling Husky was drafted in the fourth as a hopeful post-Rivers starter. Now, Rivers was an Iron Man and played nearly every snap for the Colts this year. Now, of all the rookies, I liked his landing spot the best. They are a solid playoff team, strong on both sides of the ball. And he may easily walk into a starting role next year, or whenever Rivers decides to retire to the stud farm, well, he will continue to sire his multitudes. Now, I have a few shares that I was able to pick up, mostly at the end of the third, which is great. I'm going to be keeping him in super flex leagues. I mean, maybe one QB leagues if I have a super deep roster. I know in my one of my main leagues, I just added him. I dropped my cornerbacks because it was an IDP league and I added him. But I mean, if it's a shallow league, I wouldn't necessarily hold on to him. I'm still not down on Eason. Am I alone?
No, there's definitely potential there. There's an outstanding offensive line, a really solid running game, and there's every opportunity for a young quarterback to come in and be effective in their really heavy play action offense. So yeah, there's no reason in the world to get rid of him unless you need the roster spot.
Yeah, now speaking of smelling like cabbage, Kyle Allen, who do you have next for us?
Well, another former Georgia Bulldogs legend, the man who supplanted Jacob Eason would be Jake Fromm, the consensus 410 from our May ADP ranks. He did not start in 2020. It's highly unlikely that he'll start in 2021 as he's currently not the backup to Josh Allen, but the fourth string quarterback in Buffalo.
Oof.
And it's unlikely he'll see the field barring craziness, or if he comes in, they have an actual preseason and he's able to throw and he impresses the coaches and makes his way up to a backup role. That's really the only way I see him realistically making it there, but I don't see that happening any times. If I had just a monstrously deep bench, I might hold on to him, but I think at this point you're safe to drop him.
Even 100-man rosters.
Right, yeah.
But he's not just the guy who supplanted Jacob Eason, right? I mean, he's the guy who beat out Justin Fields and forced him to transfer.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
won an SEC championship, won a Rose Bowl, went to a national championship. I mean, he did well at Georgia. He's just disappeared.
Yeah.
JJ, real quick. I talked about DeAndre Hopkins earlier, who is known for his monstrous hands. Anything to say about Jake Fromm?
He has small hands.
There it is.
Smells like cabbage. He's a carny folk. Man, I'm never short on making a joke about Jake Fromm's hands.
No, you certainly.
Well, that wraps up the drafted QBs. Was there any other QBs that we wanted to talk about? Jake Luton kind of showed up and disappeared.
Hey, say his name correctly. It's highfalutin Jake Luton.
Highfalutin Jake Luton.
Yeah. I'm going to trademark that like Don's trademarked offensive genius.
Hey,
McVay.
There you go, man. You can have it. And don't plan on using it much because the Jags certainly don't plan on using him much. He's going right back to the bench he was on, and he's going to stay there for perpetuity. And that's the end of Jake Luton.
Yeah, Ben DiNucci. None of the other guys really panned out this year.
No, that's really kind of it.
All right. Well, you know, now, although we never really see Superflex tight end premium rankings, which I think actually we should try this year. I think we need to check on how the tight ends in this class perform. It is important to remember that tight ends are the slowest developing offensive. That's a rule. You're generally like never going to see production out of rookie tight ends. It's very, very rare. Except for Chris. That was a joke. Now, so it definitely takes a few years to learn most of the nuances of in-line play. So looking at the first tight end to go in rookie ADP at 310, Cole Kmet. Now, Kmet earned his keep through special team. After Chicago's Week 11 bye, Kmet became much more involved in the offense, earning 33 targets over the last six games, and he finished as the tight end 24. Through those six games. Think of him as Austin Hooper. Looking at his performances this year, he's really just kind of good at everything, but not great in any one area. They have a very similar size, similar workout metrics. Hooper was a bit quicker than Cole Kmet, but Cole Kmet was a little bit more explosive and bigger. I see Cole Kmet as a perennial tight end one, but low end, just like Austin Hooper. Like that tight end 5, tight end 6, through tight end 12. So if you have Cole Kmet, you're probably getting offers for him. Do not move him in tight end premium leagues. If you're in a one tight end, no premium league, always trade your tight ends. They don't matter. Any Cole Kmet questions?
I think you hit the nail on the head there. Low tight end 1, kind of a boring but solid option.
Yeah, I'd say don't trade him, just commit.
Lord. I haven't heard jokes that bad since I watched How I Commit Your Mother. Ugh. No? That was bad. I'm cutting that out of the pod. Sorry.
It sounds.
I apologize for that. Kyle, who was the next tight end to go in rookie drafts?
Well, with all these bad jokes, we're just going to have to go. You might catch a trout, man. Adam Trautman was the consensus 4.03.
Sorry.
I had to compose myself. He was never the number one tight end in New Orleans this year. but he did see the field progressively throughout the field, or throughout the season, rather. He found the end zone once, but he failed to ever break through for more than in any given game in normal PPR scoring. Obviously, tight end premium were twice. This season, he finished as the tight end 57, only managed 2.5 points per game. Not exactly stellar. However, he might get a chance to start next year. Jared Cook becomes an unrestricted free agent in 2021. Taysom Hill appears to be the incumbent for the starting QB role, although we don't know what's going to happen with Drew Brees. So it is possible that he could be their starting tight end next year. Now, what that will spell for him if Taysom Hill is actually the quarterback, we don't know. Taysom Hill didn't really target Jared Cook very much, and whether that was because he wanted to have a job when Drew Brees came back or if it was just how he runs off. I'm going to hold on to him just for the chance that he could have an increased role next season. As we mentioned, tight ends, especially rookie tight ends, develop slowly, but he's going to have a good shot at getting some starting reps next.
Yeah. Now the fourth round is definitely where people were taking their shots on tight end. So 4-3, we had Adam Trautman go. At 4-6, Eric, who do we have?
We have Devin Asiasi, which I hope I'm saying that right. Who went, you know, also in the third round to the Patriots, fourth round in the ADP here. But he also did not have a very productive rookie season. He spent a month on IR. He spent a lot of time just not playing, a lot not on the field whatsoever, and ended up finishing the season with just two catches for 39 yards, which is pretty abysmal. Hope you weren't starting him much in fantasy there. What concerns me a little bit about that is that there, yes, tight ends take a while, but that New England offense, I think we've talked about, doesn't have a ton of weapons. So the opportunity was there, even if they only threw the ball, you know, 440 times. The opportunity, I think, to get on the field and Briz there. I mean, Kyle, I don't know if you as a Patriots fan have any other insights, but it seems like a discouraging sign for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of weird to see him not get much action considering the draft capital they put in taking him in the third. I expected him to see him more in the passing game, but they really didn't target the tight end very much at all this year. Like you said, he was injured, so he didn't really get to come in. And with the tight end position developing slowly, not having a preseason, I feel like hurts a lot. So I'll be curious to see what they do with him next year. Hopefully you didn't invest a lot of draft capital in him in rookie drafts, but I feel like it's kind of dealer.
Yeah. I guess the one good thing about him, too, is he's one of those guys who's more of the receiving tight end archetype.
Very much so. Yeah.
Which is ideal for fantasy. Yeah. Speaking of, if I can just roll that right into the next guy, at the 407 in our ADP, Albert Okwugbunam, which I know I just butchered that, went to the Broncos with a fourth round pick, got a little bit of hype in preseason, was a little more involved in the offense, was actually, you know, is another guy who was a big receiving option in college. I really liked him coming into the draft last year. Before the draft, before we knew any draft capital information or anything like that, he was my favorite tight end in the class. But he kind of landed in a terrible spot with Denver, where he's blocked by Noah Fant at tight end, and they've got just a variety of options. I mean, they've got Sutton, Judy, Hamler, Tim Patrick, even Melvin Gordon in the passing game. So he's just really buried, and on top of that, they don't have a quarterback option, right? Which is concerning. So I think there might be some talent there. He had 11 catches, 120 yards this season. Usual rookie tight end disclaimer, and I like the talent, but I struggle to see the path to playing time there. To me, that's, you're going to be waiting a while when Fant and all those other weapons are so young.
You know, it was a heartwarming story when you heard that during the draft process that Drew Locke was telling the GM and telling the coach how great his former teammate Albert O was. But you almost wonder if he was doing him a disservice by pushing for on a team that has a really entrenched tight end one in Noah Fant, who young, explosive. He might have buried his good buddy on a depth chart. And I agree with you. I don't
made him catch passes from Drew Locke. Real dick move there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a dick move. I'm a little bit worried about his path to any type of success shortly. Luckily, tight ends tend to peak later in their 20s. So maybe in his second contract, get traded somewhere where he'll get an opportunity. Now, another tight end coming in at 408, Mr. Detweiler.
So we dip a little deeper in now. This is Josiah DeGura from Cincinnati, the University of Cincinnati, that is. He's kind of your classic H-back type. He's a little smaller. He's 6'2", 240, but was hyper-productive in college. There was the regular draft knocks on him that he was going to be too small, not really a real position guy, couldn't handle the inline blocking, even though he's a willing blocker, but with just not having the size. Long story short, the guy wound up in the worst place in the world to be a tight end, which is Green Bay. And he was a third-round pick, but that doesn't mean that he's going to get any attention whatsoever. I see him spun more into a fullback, H-back type when he plays a full healthy season next year, hopefully. And I just don't see it, especially with Tanyan developing into a player that actually has the quarterback's eye, which is so critical in Green Bay. I just don't see the value here, and I don't see him really develop. Sad to say, because I really like the University of Cincinnati, and I like this guy when he was there because he's such a weapon on that team, but I just don't see it in the pros.
Yeah, we seem to be picking a lot of tight ends. Their ADP fell right around this range, and each of them seems to not have been worth the picks. Now, finishing out the drafted tight ends at the end of the fourth round with their ADP of 411. Kyle, who do we have?
We have Mr. Dalton Keene, the other tight end that the Patriots, they already talked about, Devin Asiasi. Dalton Keene saw a lot more work as a blocking tight end. He caught all of like three passes this season. He failed to catch more than one in any given game. He did start a few games for them, but it wasn't in any kind of role, which was disappointing after seeing him draft two tight ends. A lot of people pointed back to when they took Aaron and Rob Gronkowski in the draft, which obviously off the field issues there we hopefully won't see out of these two. But obviously people were excited to see hopefully a rebirth of Will. He's finished the season ranked as tight end 99. I really don't see him finding any fantasy relevance in the future. As a Pats fan, I hope he proves me wrong. But it's very unlikely next year or the year after that significant role.
Now, Devin Asiasi did play more snaps, offensive snaps.
They were actually around the same amount. Devin Asiasi did play more by count, but they were close.
Yeah, it was 213 to 140 for the year.
Okay, it wasn't as close as
still right around that same. They fell in the PFF. I think they were both a little bit disappointed as far as what they brought. Even their run blocking grades were not where they should be, and I know that the Pats love good run blocking time. Now,
combined, they got outproduced by Ryan Izzo. That tells you no.
Yeah, that's definitely not a shining star to put on your resume. Now, an undrafted free agent, somebody who went in a lot of fifth round in the tight end position, was Thaddeus Moss. Now, between his last name and his performance in last year's championship game, Moss had a lot of fantasy nerds drooling. He was heading to the Washington football team, where the only tight end of any significance was Jeremy Sprinkle. And the thought process with Thaddeus Moss was that somebody is going to get targets in that room. Why not Moss? He was the cheaper option to Sprinkle with much more upside. I messed up. I didn't see Logan Thomas coming as much as I should have. And I think what I have learned, right, from trying to look at my drafts and see where I mess, is to remember that NFL GMs know a lot more than I do, right? NFL coaches, we talked about this earlier, know a lot more than we do. So if a player is undrafted, it's probably for a reason, especially if they went to a big-time college like LSU. Every scout saw him play and interacted with him, right? With all the talent that was on LSU, everybody saw him play. And they all decided not to draft him, right? I probably shouldn't be drafting somebody. We shouldn't be drafting who everybody has had an opportunity to see and still pass on them, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You should be, the only exception would be, and you won't be drafting these players, you'll be getting them off waiver wires, is if you are following a team particularly closely and watching camp reports and you need to take a flyer that way on waivers, that's different. But trying to draft these guys. No, that unfortunately was one that didn't pan out for a lot of people.
All right, finishing off the tight ends with another fifth round selection. Mr. Don Detweiler.
Cleveland Browns take Harrison Bryant, and it's raised a bunch of eyebrows with spending a tremendous amount of money on Austin Hooper and having David Njoku already on the team. That's going to be a temporary situation. I absolutely see Njoku moving on in this offseason. The team has kept him involved to try and keep him happy while he's around, but you could see in the splits for plays and you could see in the usage patterns that Harrison Bryant is certainly going to be that second wide receiver. And coming out of Florida Atlantic, this guy's got all the measurables, 6'5", 250. He's what you expect to see out of the tight end position and certainly has been better utilized than Njoku, who's really just more your pass catching only type tight end. Bryant is somebody you should be interested in getting if you can get him on the cheap, because it certainly seems like in that Stefanski style offense that the Browns are running and wish to employ going forward, that the tight ends are both going to be somewhat relevant. And if you have Hooper already, it's not a bad idea to handcuff with Bryant, especially if you're in a best ball league where you could take advantage of a blow up week from one of these guys. It's certainly to your advantage. You should be able to get them for virtually nothing or on the very cheap anyway, and it's worth having.
I agree. I love Harrison Bryant. I added him to a few rosters, hopefully just to let him sit there and percolate until he's ready to perform.
Yes, you sure did. In one of our dynasty leagues together, I had some tight end woes, and I dropped him at the beginning of the year to pick up somebody who is actually getting playing time in the early season. Swooped him right up, much to my chagrin.
Oh, did I? I'm so sorry.
You did. And he's still on your roster.
Yeah,
like, after he started getting more
super
snaps
sorry.
The year, I was like,
I'm not okay. Super sorry.
I have Kittle, Jarwin, and Uzuma, and all three of them had seasons. Like, I got to get somebody that's playing. So I had to drop him.
Sometimes you have to do what you have to do. I can't blame you. So looking at the QB and tight end position, gentlemen, it's a post-mortem, right? We're supposed to look at what we did wrong and what we did right. Did we learn anything from last year's draft of these two positions?
Tight end developed slowly, as we said. Don't put too much stock in draft capital at the tight end position, because there are some that may, or not the tight end position, the quarterback position, because there are some that may transcend that. Everybody thought, oh, Justin Herbert went to the Chargers. He was drafted later than Burrow and Tua, so they're expecting him to not really see the field, and then all it takes is one freak thing, and here we are. A lot of people have Herbert ahead of Burrow and ahead of Tua. So it really just watch film, pay attention. If you like a player and he goes to a team where you feel like he's going to be successful, trust your gut, because there's a reason that you feel that way. If you like him, take your man.
And the same thing is true is if a player that you like goes to a situation you know is terrible, then it's totally acceptable to wave off or to trade out and get assets and let somebody else hop on that hand grenade. If it turns out you were wrong, you could trade for him later.
Sounds pretty fair to me. All right, gentlemen, it's the time for tags, where we share our final thoughts and let the writers know where they can find us. Kyle, why don't you kick us off?
Well, if you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at KAllen_4. A lot of this episode, we spent time reflecting on last year, and I am working on an article for our site right now, reflecting on some of my takes from the year. In the preseason, I made a Twitter thread. I posted players that I listed were overhyped based on their ADP and players that were being overlooked based on their ADP. And I won't say any spoilers here, but I'm happy with the results. I'm putting it in a article. It's going to be out, hopefully, by the time you're listening to it, it'll be today, but it'll be out this Friday. So take a look at it. I'll post it on my Twitter. You can find me at KAllen_4.
Eric.
Well, I don't have anything that impressive coming out, but you can find me on Twitter at Eric Braunmower. Hit me up. And on Reddit now at Rider Dynasty Eric, if you see me on there.
Don.
If you need me, you can always find me at Rider Dynasty, or just tweet any of the guys and they'll get me the information. So you could send all your well wishes to them, and they will certainly direct it to me in kind. They might even say what you said, so who knows? The world's a crazy place right now. J- just tell the people that matter to you that they matter. And the other thing to think about now is just getting rid of the toxic nature of things that are around you. If you don't like your circumstances, maybe it's time to change them.
Yeah. If you or someone you know is thinking of hurting themselves, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, 1-800-273-8255. So from all of us to all of you, be safe, be well, and remember, make hay while the sun shines.